You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Hi there, teachers. It's Tim Topham here, and welcome back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Great to be spending some more time with you this month as part of our business month. We're looking at all things business, and today is no exception. We have a guest here who's created a 500-student teaching studio that not only involves instruments, but also dance. And we're going to be finding out all about how he's put it together and some of his tips for you if you're looking to expand, whether that's just to one extra teacher or, as he's got, multiple teachers. This week's freebie is my ultimate guide to left-hand piano styles and patterns. This has been a hugely popular free download on the website. It's great if you're exploring lead sheets or any type of chord work with students, because we know that one of the critical elements of the left hand of a pianist is to not only play the bass line and to give rhythm, but also to give style. And by style, we mean, are we talking tangos or blues or walking bass lines, whatever it is. A lot of that comes from the left hand. And so helping students understand how you can change the left hand pattern in order to change the style of a piece of music can be really both fun, but a great learning experience for students. So if you'd like to download that, it's over at topmusic.co/patterns. You can grab that for free right now. My guest today is Nick Tucker, who's the owner and founder of Spark Music and Dance, a multi-location music and dance school located in Minnesota, which was established in 2016. He's also the co-founder of the Studio Success System, a lead nurturing and following up system designed for music and dance schools worldwide. Additionally, Nick collaborates with the Build a Music School team, run by my friend Johnny, offering coaching to music schools and assisting them in making a positive impact on the lives of more children and studio owners across the globe. Welcome to the show, Nick. Great to meet you.
Great to meet you too. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Very, very cool. So you run a school called Spark Music and Dance. Tell us a little bit how the school looks today. So where are you based? What instruments do you have? What locations do you have?
Yeah. So we have two different locations. We're in Minnesota, sort of, 30 minutes or so outside the Minneapolis. And yeah, as far as instruments go, we offer, guitar, drums, bass, violin, viola, ukulele, piano, drums. I think I got all eight of them.
Yeah.
And then additionally, back last year, we opened up our dance program, which operates in tandem with one of our locations. So that's our sort of flagship location. It's the one that's been around the longest. And then, for dance classes and whatnot, I don't want to really get into a bunch of that, but, ballet, jazz, Tiny Tots, which is like our small young kids, feeder program and whatnot. And yeah, we have about 26 teachers who work for us and, around 500 students who are coming in each and every week.
That is amazing. So what we're going to do today is I really want to drill into how you got to where you are, because I know there are teachers out there who would love to expand and grow and are looking to make those first steps. And I assume it all started for you, like it does for anyone, with you and one student in one room somewhere. So let's get to that in a second. But I think you're a drummer, is that right?
That is correct.
So what were your own drum lessons like? Because I find this fascinating. A lot of times I ask piano teachers what their lessons were like, and you could probably predict they were quite traditional and note reading and classical music. But a drum lessons, I assume they're pretty modern and funky, right?
Yeah. I took what, and maybe I learned this from somebody else and I don't know who it was, and so I can't give them credit. But this idea of like 10, 10, 10. So it was like, I would take the first 10 minutes of a lesson and we would focus on some sort of technique. Technique could mean lots of things. It could mean rudiments, like paradiddles, flams, that sort of thing. It could be just different sticking exercises, whatnot. Then we'd take 10 minutes and we'd work through some note reading, an actual chart. So, I worked through a lot of the kids worked through this Alfred's Beginning Drum Set Method book. And then we did our 10 minute rock session. And this was I always called this the dessert of the entire thing. It's like, hey, kids, we got to eat the broccoli. We got to eat the carrots, all the stuff you hate, so we can get to the chocolate cake at the end, and the and that aspect of it was all just, let's do something you want to do. And so what we do is, you know, it's I'm assuming a lot like the piano stuff. We take stuff, we simplify it down. If they're not up there, you know, ready for, you know, to be able to play, let's say, eighth notes on the hi-hat or something, maybe we're just doing quarter notes. We're getting, you know, playing along to Billie Jean or whatever song that they're interested in that really just like ignites their sort of brain into loving music.
Yeah, so important. One of our key pillars at Top Music is a student-first approach, taking what the students want to do and making sure that that is a part of the lesson. Not necessarily the whole lesson, because as you say, you need to eat your broccoli as well as play the fun tunes, but so important to capture the enthusiasm of the students for what they want to do, even more so today than I think. I was lucky when I was having lessons. My teacher also helped me learn things that I wanted to do, and I think that was critical in my continued study of the instrument. And I'm hoping more and more teachers now are doing the same thing.
I did not have that experience as a teacher. And so that was one of those things, you know, it's like my mom would always tell me as a kid, pay attention to the things that bother you, you know, whether it's their parenting style or whether it's something that happens at school or interactions we have, pay attention to those micro moments. And then when you get older, think about those things and go, well, man, I remember that moment. Here's how I'm going to change it. And so that's so much of how we came up with that idea and that mentality, is because it was all rooted in this idea of, well, I didn't get this and I desperately wanted this as a kid.
So let's go back to where it all started. And as I mentioned, I'm pretty sure, like everybody, you started one-on-one with somebody in your house. Give us the story. How did it go from there to 500 students a week?
It is, it's been quite the journey. And what I love, and I share this story with every single new hire we have too, because I think it's so important to who we are and why we do what we do and how we do it. But in 2014, I was fired from my music teaching job, and it was 20 days after I had just closed on a house and 5 days before I was getting married.
Was that so, was this for a private music school or for a secondary school sort of thing?
Yep. Yeah. So I was teaching for a private music school nearby.
Oh my gosh.
I was teaching there. It was something like 3 or 4 days a week at that point. And I got fired, and it was, you know, we had planned this honeymoon and we were going to be gone for 2 weeks and all the things. Right. And I so vividly remember, walking home or driving back home, walking inside and looking at my wife and going,
wife to be,
I got fired today. This will be the best thing that'll ever happen to us.
Wait, and that's what you said.
That's what I said to her with a bottle of wine.
Wait, you knew that at the time?
I knew it at the time. It was like, I felt so deeply that, like, if I didn't have this push, I would have never started teaching on my own. I needed somebody to push me out.
Right. Okay.
And so I had driven to the liquor store. I bought a bottle of wine and I was like, let's celebrate this moment. Now my sweet wife is sobbing because she is like, safety and security. I need it. Now I don't have it. We're getting married in 5 days. How are we going to pay for this mortgage? We just closed on this house 20 days ago, all the things. And so I just said, well, I'll just teach drum lessons from the basement. That's what we'll do. And so I went and got a part-time job valeting cars at a hotel, and I started teaching drum lessons out of my basement. And in 2016, our oldest daughter was welcomed into the world. And a few months before she came, my wife said, listen, I love you, but drums.
But the noise, yeah.
And a sleeping infant, they're not going to go well together. So, buddy, drums got to get out of the house. So go, you know, go do your thing, go do whatever you want, and, you know, just go find somewhere else to do it. So I went and rented this super small commercial location. And I think it was, I don't know, 600 feet or, you know, square feet, something like that. It wasn't big. It was enough to have a drum set and, like, you know, in one corner and a piano in the other and like a small waiting area.
So it's just one room?
It was just one room.
And a bathroom, and so, I assume.
And at that moment, within a couple weeks, there was this almost feeling of like loneliness, and looking at the whole thing and being like, man, it's lonely here. And so I called up a buddy and I was like, Keith, can you come? He was a construction guy. Can you come and build me two walls? And I want to build another room in this space. And so we chopped up some of the waiting room area. We were like, okay, we're putting another room in here. And at that point I was like, I don't know who to hire. So I started reaching out to friends and I took a guy out to lunch and was like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I just want somebody in the room with me. Like, so it was this, like, I had zero like interest in starting a business. You know, my business was me teaching drum lessons. And I was like, I'll take a little bit of cut because I'm going to bring in these students. I'm going to do some marketing. At that time, I was teaching, I don't know, probably 25 kids or so. And within about 6 months, we had gotten up to, I don't know, it was like 60 or 65 students between me. And now we had this other guy, plus one friend of mine. I grew up in Illinois. He moved up to Minnesota. And he was like, hey, man, I need a job. You know, can I teach lessons too? And I was like, sure, come on in. And so we started this, it started rolling. And there's this building that became available for lease across the street. And I remember calling my wife and being like, hey, that building's available. What do you think about it? And at this time, my wife is like, listen, the drum thing, I get it. It's just fun. You're going to do that. And then you're going to go get a sales job and you're going to make crazy amounts of money doing sales. But like, I'm going to let you do the drum thing for as long as you want until you realize it's not going to happen. And in that moment, she was like, let's do it. And I was like, wait a second, for real? She was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's get this space. And it was 1300 square feet. We had like, we looked at it and we were like, we could put 8 rooms in here and we could like build a music school. And so we, we pulled every dollar out of our retirement. We pulled, we took a loan out on my wife's 401k. We drained our entire savings and we were like, let's go all in on this thing. And that was the moment that it was like the brain had to switch from this is fun, this is a thing for me and my buddies, to wait, we're on to something. We've got a business here. And from then on out, you know, it's just been growth. And you know, within all of that, it's all founded in this idea of like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So my job is to make mistakes. And when I make mistakes, it gives me the opportunity to grow. And it also allows my team now at this point, the opportunity to grow. So we always say, do great things for kids and make mistakes. You do those things too, those two things really well, you're going to have lots of success here.
Wow. So many threads to pick up on. Love the, obviously the mistakes part of it. I think I wrote a blog many years ago about why mistakes are so important and why children shouldn't be afraid of making mistakes. Actually, there was a great quote I read recently from, it was a TED talk, and it was something to the effect of, if you're not prepared to make mistakes, you will never create anything original in the world, or something like that.
And I love
so
that.
So true. You really have to be able to put yourself out there and be okay with failing or making mistakes in order to get something that you really want or to create things that are new. Yeah.
Totally. We frame it like this with our, when we're onboarding our new staff. Now we say, there's two different things. A mistake. This is what a mistake is. A mistake is when you choose to do something or take an action that you believe will have a positive outcome, but instead has a negative outcome. We're okay with mistakes. We encourage mistakes. We want mistakes. What we don't want is irresponsibility. And irresponsibility is, you know, taking action or doing something, thinking that the results will be negative, and choosing to do that action anyways. So we say, we don't want to do irresponsible things. What we do want to do is focus on the mistakes, because those are, that is still being responsible.
Right. And just going back into your story, that first person that you hired, it was already a friend of yours. What was he teaching? What instrument?
Yeah. So he was teaching guitar and, you know, there was no curriculum. There was nothing. It was like,
it really was ad hoc, throw this together, let's see what happens.
It was,
literally, because you were feeling a bit lonely, like you wanted some mates around to do this with.
Totally. Yeah. It's that, you know, it's that idea of like, we all crave connection as humans. We all crave connection and community, which is exactly what the kids want in our schools. Right. And so you look back at it and it's like the whole reason that I wanted to stick around and keep doing the thing is because I craved that connection and that community with other adults.
Got it. Yeah. And that social part of playing, that collaborative part of playing music for students as well, is a huge thing. We're very positive about that at Top Music too, because particularly piano students are very isolated often because it's such a beautiful solo instrument. You can have a lot of fun on your own. But anytime I ask teachers, you know, what are the times that you remember back in your own childhood of playing music? It's almost 99% when they were doing something with other people, at playing at a concert, accompanying a mate, playing in a band, doing something with their duet with their teacher. Do you find that same kind of thing as well that you can now experience with 500 students? You must be able to do some pretty cool social collaborative stuff together.
Oh, yeah. This is actually one of our really, this is a big focus for us right now. We are desperate to find ways for the kids to connect with each other. You know, so many kids we see nowadays, they've got their faces buried in their phones, you know, looking at Instagram, Snapchat, all these things. And what we're trying to do is help kids get their eyes up and start looking around and see the world around them and see the people around them and create connections and create, you know, community with each other. So even in our Champlin location, one of the things that we've done is we've set up video games in the lobby. And the whole purpose of the video games is all for kids to go sit down next to each other, build relationship and connect with each other in the lobby. So like extends beyond, you know, just playing music together. There's so many ways that we can craft connection and create these moments. You know, I said to our team even today that when kids show up the first time for their first music lesson, they show up to learn music, but they stick around to connect with each other. And that's what the whole purpose of, like, you know, creating music is. It's let's put them in a band. Let's create these micro moments over here for them to be able to connect with video games, or, you know, these random events where it's just pizza and hanging out together.
Yeah. And I think that's potentially where teachers of solo instruments that work one-on-one only can miss out or not provide those opportunities for their students. And why I think even if you are only working one-on-one, having those weekend, like a weekend workshop or a holiday camp or some events, pizza parties, whatever it is, are critical just to get people together. Or as I don't know if you're familiar with, but there's more interest in piano teachers, particularly doing overlapping lessons. So two students will come, they'll have a 30-minute lesson on their own, they'll have 15 minutes crossover with another student, play some duets, do some funky stuff, and then the other student has 30 minutes. So they have 45-minute lessons each. Those kinds of things just provide that opportunity for that social connection. I think it's critical.
That's really cool. The other thing, and this is, you know, just an idea that our team came up with on Tuesday last week, but they said, why can't we just reach out to other music schools or other teachers in the area and try and connect, you know, these kids who are maybe doing piano with other kids at, you know, who are doing similar things at other places. Now, naturally, I always say that music teachers are territorial, which
yeah,
to me isn't really all that helpful. But if we take the opportunity to go, well, I teach piano, but I know I've got this guitar teacher down the street, I wonder if we could find some way to collaborate together, you know, and take our piano students and this guitar, you know, these guitar students, and put them together to have some cool jam time or whatever that might be.
Such a great idea. Yeah. Well, I've followed your progress for a while through our mutual friend, Johnny Wilson at Builder Music School. And one thing that you announced back in February in his group, which I might quote because it kind of blew me away, you said, we just hired a vice president of operations and human resources. And I went, what is this guy doing? Because, you know, normally we would associate that with a Fortune 500 company. So you said, quote, we just hired a vice president. We promoted our front office manager into this role, and we're promoting one of her front desk team members to our front office manager. And that's when I went, wow, I have to chat to Nick to work out what's going on here, because this is pretty unusual, I think, even in the world of music schools. So there's a lot of music schools out there, multiple teachers, maybe an admin person at the desk, but you've taken this to another level. So tell us, how does all this work?
Yeah. So ultimately it was really rooted in two things. The first thing, and you'll see that in that post, is the development of our staff. So I looked at this person we promoted into this vice president of operations and HR role, and I looked at her and I saw so much more potential in her, and that I knew I needed to feed that potential for her, you know, to really let her grow and blossom. As leaders of a company or of a school, our job with our staff is not to hold on to our people for as long as humanly possible. I believe our job is to, you know, train and grow people and then be willing and okay to send them off. When she leaves, don't get me wrong, it will break my heart.
Absolutely.
But I also find so much joy in knowing that whatever we're doing and what we're helping her build into is preparing her for whatever is the next thing. And I think there's so much beauty in that. And then what's great about her is then you see how we promoted one of the front desk team members. And that was a conversation that we had with her. And it was, and we had noticed that, you know, that there was this other front desk person, just standard sort of admin person who was in there. And we're like, man, she clearly is wanting more. She wants to own a leadership role. She wants to be able to hire and inspire her team. And so we just saw this natural progression that was going to be able to happen from, you know, front office staff worker into being, you know, the actual department lead. And then our department lead, who was managing the front desk, to then go up to the operations role. And so that's where, like, I mean, that's a little long-winded, but that's the first reason. And then the second aspect of that is that it was a learning opportunity for me, because what I was doing was I was looking at myself and going, man, I'm really great at the marketing aspect of this company, but organizationally, I do feel like I'm lacking. And I don't feel like I have as much to give. And I think it was Alex Hormozi talks about how there's two types of people in the world, or two types of business owners. There's the one over here who's really great at marketing. And then there's the person over here who's great in operations. Rarely, now it does happen, do you have somebody who's great at both. But that's a very, very rare occurrence. And so what I started doing is going, well, if we want to grow this thing, I need my organization person over here who's going to be able to lead the managers, create, you know, all the developmental side of things over here, while I can be over here and just focus on the growth and retention within the company. And so that was a major reason that we promoted her into that role, is just because I knew that I was reaching a cap on what I think my skill level could handle. And I needed to bring somebody in to relieve some of that from me.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about an amazing community of music teachers ready to welcome you over at Top Music Pro. Top Music Pro is the global hub for music teachers looking to connect, learn, grow, and be challenged in both their teaching and studio businesses. Community members save time by accessing hundreds of step-by-step lesson plans, creative teaching frameworks, business guides, online courses, and workshops. We offer training in topics as diverse as music technique, lead sheets, website building, intermediate repertoire, group teaching, and special needs teaching. We also save you money through our extensive discounts, including those with Music Notes, Sheet Music Plus, Music Room, Office Depot, Tonebase, and many more. And if you like sheet music, all our members get a free book of studio licensed, beautifully engraved sheet music each and every month. As a valued podcast listener, you can check out the Top Music Pro community free for 14 days by heading to topmusicpro.com, clicking Join Now on our studio tier, and using the special coupon code IMTPOD23. That's all one word. So that's IMTPOD23. We can't wait to welcome you inside. All right. And so before that, you were doing all the operational work. So scheduling and admin, finances, all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yep. Okay. So that's now all gone off your plate. Are you still teaching, by the way?
So I teach three kids. We have this conversation with our leadership team. Gosh, I don't know, once or twice a year, where we ask the question, is it time for me to be done with it? And really what we've done is we've just gotten to a point where we're like, let's let the last couple kids linger. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's an hour and a half of my time. And we're like, when they're ready to go, whether it's college or whatever it may be, but like, you know, some of these kids have been with me for years and years. One of them who we just recently stopped taking lessons had been with me since I was teaching drum lessons out of my basement. And he stopped last year.
Wow.
And so there's
been the whole, that person's seen the whole progression from your basement to your multi locations.
Yeah. So it's been like that aspect of it. I still have a strong emotional connection, you know, that I have with these kids that just, it feels so hard to give up and it feels unfair for me to just let them go like that.
So how many admin team do you have in the business that don't teach, or do they also teach these people?
No. So we have always kept them separate. So we've never had our admin crossover into music teachers. And partially that's really recognizing the personalities of musicians. A lot of times they don't have all the organizational skills and all that sort of stuff, which is also why, you know, our model allows us to have the admin team. And we always tell the music teachers, like, your job is to come in and teach and do your thing that you do really well. And that's it. Like, let's just focus on that thing for you. With our admin team, we're going to come over here. We're going to be like, yes, you do this thing really well, like organization and, you know, keeping everything and responding to emails. You do that thing well. So let's just let you do that. So as far as our admin team goes, at this point, there's five people. A lot of them, what we've done now is they're all part-time except for the one department lead. And so the organizational structure wise, I'll try and, if you can visualize this, we have our VP of operations. And then she oversees the dance department lead, the music department lead, the rock band department lead, and the what we call first impressions, which is our admin team, that department lead. So she oversees them, and then those people oversee their team underneath them. And so they're all, most of them are all high schoolers. And this is just all part of our idea of like, let's invite more kids into sort of what we're doing and be able to train leaders to be, you know, these kids to become leaders in the community.
Amazing. Okay. So one, I think, you know, hiring can be a little bit terrifying at first. And I remember the first time I hired someone, you're never at a point in the business when you need to hire someone, you never generally have enough money to hire that person, and you've got to make this toss up between time and the money and the benefits, everything, right? So have you got any tips for teachers who might be listening, who may be contemplating that first hire? They're not going to, you know, hire their buddy over a beer at the bar. They want to do it properly. How do you go about that? And what tips have you got?
Okay. So first, if you wanted the beer with the buddy, I love that analogy, because for the longest time, when I used to hire our music teachers, my barometer for like hiring music teachers was, I always thought to myself after the interview, I was like, huh, I could probably have a beer with that person. Yeah, I'll hire them. Which was a really, what I learned was a really unhealthy way of thinking. So ultimately what we did, and we actually just overhauled this all over again. It was one of our quarter one projects that our team did. But really what you need to do is you need to figure out three or four core traits that you're looking for in a person, and write those down and look at the values of your company. Like, what's the mission? What are the values of your company? You know, what are three, four things that you're like, man, these are non-negotiable. Like, every teacher needs to have these four qualities. And then you write those out. And then from there you go, okay, so if I wanted to ask questions that would pull this information out of somebody, what would I ask? And start just crafting questions around that, you know, three or four questions for each sort of personality trait. And that's what I call the meat of the interview. Now, what I do prior to that is just remember, if this is the first person you're ever hiring, like, you're going to be crazy nervous.
Yeah, as nervous as the other person. Yeah.
But yeah, I was going to say that other person is just as nervous as you are. So ask questions that break the ice, that make it real simple. You know, it's like, hey, tell me more about yourself. What do you do on the weekends? What are your hobbies? Those sorts of questions that really just get them to relax and unwind a little bit and realize that we're not going to, you know, come and ask for this like real technical detailed interview. And so we go through that, and then we go, you know, once we feel like we've got them settled in a little bit, then we'll jump into the meat and potatoes of the whole thing. We're like, okay, let's talk about these, you know, and we don't tell them the four personality traits. You know, we just craft our questions to go down that line. Then we do a little bit of a performance interview. And after that performance interview,
What's a performance interview?
Yeah. So what we do is we ask them to come prepared with a piece, whatever it may be, and play that piece. And then after they play their prepared piece, because again, it's all about trying to make them comfortable, then we throw something in front of them, you know, whether that's from some of the books or some works that different students and stuff are working on. And in that moment, you have to remember, they're still nervous. Don't expect perfection. You can't sit there and go, this is going to be, you know, this has to be perfect. And if it's not perfect, well, then they're out the door. Like use the filter of, okay, we're all a little nervous here. That's okay. And so, yeah, we'll have them go through that. And then based on
that, to sight read or sight play.
Yep. To do some sight reading and stuff. Yeah. And then this is a Johnny Wilson from the Build a Music School. This is one of his questions that he asks at the end of the interview. It's something along the lines of, and I don't do the hiring anymore, so I'm going to try to do my best to remember. But it's something like, so tell me, what do you think we should do next?
Do you mean in the interview or for this school?
So in the position. So like, so we've had this whole conversation. Like, what do you think we should do next? And they, you know, if they're like, well, I'm really interested in this, and I would love the job. Well, now you're looking at somebody who, like, you know, they're able to effectively communicate with you exactly what they want and what they need. Now, just based on that, like, if somebody's like, I don't know, like, I guess I'll wait to hear back from you. Like, don't base it on that. But you'll notice that there's maybe patterns and stuff that you'll start seeing in people that make you go, oh, I like when somebody says this after this interview. Like, it's just like anything.
Interesting.
You're gonna do it. You're gonna cycle through it. You're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna get better at it, and you're gonna get better at it. And one of the things that our team does, our management staff every year, is they rank. This sounds terrible, but they rank our staff A, B, or C. And so we call them A players. And then we have a couple higher ranks where we're like, oh, we could see ourselves promoting this person. But what you'll notice is the C players either drop off or they become B players. And slowly, as you interview and you get better at what you do, then your B players, you know, start looking like C players because you've hired great A players. And so, so slowly you just start raising the bar. And that's where I look back 5 years ago at our staff. And at that time, we had a great staff. I don't think that staff could hang with what we're doing today, because what we've had to do is we've had to consistently elevate the bar, and our staff has elevated it with us.
Right. Okay. I've heard from other school owners around the world that it's been a challenging time for a lot of them to find good teachers to hire. I wondered if you had found the same and if you had any thoughts on that challenge.
Great question. So I don't do a ton of the hiring anymore. So it's really hard for me to give you a hard, direct answer to that. But what I will tell you is that because of our hiring systems and how we've spent so much time honing them and refining them and making them better, especially, you know, in the past 6 months, what I have noticed is we don't have a lack of teachers. Like, we're never in a spot where we're like, oh, well, we really need to hire. And part of that, I think, stems out of this idea that we have a mantra. We say hire, you know, 365 days a year. It doesn't matter if you need somebody or not. You need to constantly be in a state of hiring, because
looking
what you're going to do.
Quality people.
Looking. Yeah.
Just being aware of who's around and what they're doing, all that kind of stuff.
Yep, absolutely. And so what we've done now is we're like, you know, we're constantly at a state of hiring. And I know. So I just onboarded, did our, you know, they get 90 minutes with me, you know, early on, and where we go into like mission and culture and values and all that sort of stuff. And we talk about like at our core, why we do what we do. And the last two people that have come through in the past month have been spectacular. And as I'm getting to know them a little bit more, as I like poke my head in, you know, once, twice a week or whatever, it has been quality teachers have not been a problem for us to find that I am aware of. And more than that, I think that stems out of our staff just always looking for people, not when they're desperate, but when they're in a safe space and they're like, okay, I've got what I need. What if there's something better out there?
Great tips. Yeah. So you, I'm just interested in how the VP role has panned out, because it's been 6 months or a little bit more. And I'm also in that same question wondering what you are doing now. Have you kind of stepped back from the business, not spending so much time in it anymore? Because I guess you're teaching three students, you're doing some marketing. It sounds like a lot of the other stuff's covered off your plate. So what are you working on now?
Yeah. So as far as me personally, you know, I've been able to do the marketing stuff, but do it better. And so tracking numbers.
Because you have the time and the brain space now.
Because now I have the time and the brain space. Totally. Yep. So I've got, you know, I'm able to track numbers. I'm able to look at dashboards and, you know, really be able to dive it more into the nitty gritty numbers of how our marketing is doing so much better than I've ever been able to do previously. So that's one major aspect of it. Another aspect that I've been able to do is I've had the mental capacity to work on more growth long-term strategies rather than these sort of ad hoc, like, I need to do this now, so I'm going to do it. We're able to plan farther out. We're able to like ease into stuff and relax into go, okay, hey, we got this project we want to work on. We got to set a deadline. Let's do this. Here's all the people that we're going to have who are going to be working on it, you know, and then we go with that, you know, creating three, we create a 3-year strategy, a 3-year plan. We create I have the space to create a 1-year plan and then the quarterly plan and all that sort of stuff that is within that, that helps the team grow and the school grow and, you know, the students and the families have just a insanely better experience. And so that's been a lot of that. And beyond that has been, you know, if we're again just talking about the school, is, and my team loves this and hates it all at the same time, but I have, you know, I'm an ideas guy. That's who I am. So I'll like roll into, I show up for our Tuesday leadership meeting. And, you know, sometimes it's like we're sitting there trying to solve a problem together. And sometimes it's like, okay, you guys, I have this idea. What do you guys think about this? And they're like, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. So it's given me the space to start thinking through stuff. So like one of the things that I had brought up to our team on Tuesday is I was like, hey, what if we do bring a friend days or what if we do these parent night out every single week or every single month? And we do them for free, but they're only free if the kids bring a friend. So it's like, otherwise it's, you know, $35 or whatever. And so it's like, now we're building community. We're doing all these things. And they're like, who's going to do it, Nick? Who's going to staff it? I was like, we'll figure it out. And so that's a lot of what I've been doing. And then beyond that, you know, I've had the pleasure of getting to work alongside Johnny with the Build a Music School team and be able to do some of their, you know, help relieve some of the coaching aspect. And then I have a part ownership in a software that works for music schools and dance schools that helps with lead nurturing and tracking. So I've been able to dedicate a little bit more time to help grow some other ideas and things that, you know, want to create more impact in the world.
Yeah. I mean, you're truly the ideas visionary, that persona, which is why the operations side was so important for you to take that off. You can now be your true self and work on your unique skill. Even if that is, does butt heads with the rest of your team from time to time, as does mine. I often value the fact that they're like, whoa, Tim, just calm down. Let's think about this for a second. We've already got this, and this happening this month. Do you really want to add this? And I'm like, okay, well, maybe we should rethink this because it's very easy to get excited, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And again, it's, but I think it's, you know, that idea where we got to have like 50 ideas before we have like that one slam dunk. And
that's
it's
true.
And it's like, let's just, and they know that about me. I'm going to keep spewing out ideas. And then they're going to either grab a hold of them or they're not going to grab a hold of them. And I think as long as we're, you know, it's a well-informed decisions and stuff, we're able to move forward quickly and, you know, in a smart and strategic way.
So I want to wrap up in just a moment by asking just for some general tips for teachers who are interested in getting to somewhere where you've got yourself now. But before that, what's next for your school? You've got music and dance. You know, is there art and drama coming or another 5 locations? What's the plan?
Oh, man. So our you opened up a can of worms. So the vision for our company is no longer. So if we go back to our core value, and this was a process we really wrestled with 2 years ago, where we're like, why do we exist? And we exist to make impact in the lives of kids and teach them to become leaders in the community. And we started looking at it and we're like, well, there's a cap on music. And so that's where we were like, oh, well, at some point, you know, we're going to probably saturate this area and we can either keep doing this in other locations or we can just do one location. And so we're like, well, let's do one location, but what if we add dance in? Cause then now we'll have the dance kids and we'll, you know, who maybe weren't music kids, but we'll come over, you know, you come over here too. You can come party with us. And so we brought the dance kids in, and ultimately the vision is I would love to own a single. So we condense down to one single location, and I'm talking 100,000 square foot building. And we have gymnastics, karate, music, dance, art, a preschool, a swim school. We want to just become a hub where kids can come and they can go, oh, well, I'm here to try and find what fuels me and what gets me excited. And if that's art, well, then I know that I can go over here and I can do art. If it's music, well, I could stop art and I can come over here and I can do music. And additionally, so that's the benefit that we see for the kids. And then for the parents, you know, as a parent of a 5 and a 7-year-old, I'm like, man, how sweet would it be to have one spot I have to go to drop off my kid for every single activity. So we're pursuing that. So our, you know, within the next 3 years, our hope would be that we can open our next plan is to open up a preschool. And so we would like to have a small preschool that then it's an arts preschool where we will take kids and we'll feed them into our music program. They'll get exposure to dance and they'll get exposure to, you know, art and whatnot, all within our building.
Now that, folks, is called a vision. That is amazing. Thanks for sharing that, Nick. We should check in a few years' time and see how you've gone, I think. All right, before we wrap up, some quick tips, some things that you did wrong that you could save some people some hassle with. They're teaching one-on-one at the moment. They've got a big wait list. They're thinking, oh, maybe I could hire some teachers. Any thoughts for them?
Yeah. So the first one would be, and I'll go back to that idea of the don't hire the buddy or the person who you want to have a beer with. That for sure would be one of my top hiring tips at least. And then beyond that, I would say if you don't have a plan, well, then you plan to fail. And so you need to sit down and you need to evaluate, what do you want to do? Why do you want to get there? Like, what's it going to take? And so really, ultimately, it starts with finding your why. And it's like, why do I exist? And you know, what am I doing to help me live out that existence? And then within that, well, how does the company mission fit into that? And what are my company values? So that when we look at it and when we go to sit down and interview somebody, well, now I have all the things that I can sit with you and I can go, Tim, listen, hey, our number one value in this place is mentor and love kids first. Music is a byproduct of what you do. So if you're in for that, then great. If you're out for that, totally fine. Well, then there's another place for you. But I think when you hone your vision for what you want with your company and it's rooted in your company mission and values and purpose, then I think that gives you the fuel to, when you have a problem you experience that totally sucks, that it gives you the fuel to push through that, knowing that well, this is what our vision is. This is what our purpose is. And dang it, I'm going to make it happen because this is why I exist. And so I think that that's ultimately the number one thing that I would say, like, start there.
I'm not going to try to add anything to that. That was absolutely brilliantly said, Nick. It's going to make people really think, I think, about what they could do. And it's a great way to approach this kind of element of growth. It's not like, oh, crap, I should hire someone. All right, let's go and find a teacher. You're saying, stop, think. What is your goal? What are you trying to do? I think that's just a great way to finish up our conversation. So thank you very much for that. Where can people go to find out more about you and your school?
Yeah, so we are at sparkmusicanddance.com. And, you know, if you search on Google, we, you know, Spark Music and Dance, whatnot, you'll find us on Facebook and all that sort of stuff. And then, yeah, you can just look me up, Nick Tucker on Facebook. And I'm sure we can drop some links to that sort of stuff in the show notes and whatnot. So people can quick grab those. And yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tucker. It's really one of those good American names I can say. Tucker. Nick Yeehaw. Tucker. Yeah. And just for studio owners who are listening, you mentioned some software that you've got. What's the, give a quick plug to that.
Yeah, so we run a lead nurturing software called Studio Success System. You can check it out at mystudiosuccess.com. And it's a tool that just helps you make sure that you don't lose a lead ever again. And it gives you a real simple process to follow up with them, you know, with phone calls, text messages, and emails, and it's all done for you. So you don't have to sit there and write your own campaigns and text messages and all that stuff. It's a plug and play process for you. So you can jump in and get started right away.
Fantastic. All right. Well, look, thanks very much. We'll put all those links into our show notes. Really appreciate your time today, Nick. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Nick and have got some inspiration. If this is the kind of direction that you would like to take your studio, then I know Nick is only too happy to help. So do reach out to him. Or you can leave a comment on our show notes page for today's episode, which is at topmusic.co/episode347. And over on the Guitar Podcast this week, Michael is interviewing Nick Dozer, and they're talking about the balance in life, and in this case, between various passions, a guitar teacher's journey into real estate and family life. That's episode number 067. If you'd like to tune into that one, just search for the Top Music Guitar Podcast wherever you're listening to this show. Well, that's it from me today. I hope you've enjoyed spending some time with us, and I'm so glad that you have chosen to hang out with us today. If you do have just a couple of minutes to leave us a review on iTunes, please do. We would be delighted to read them, and it does make a huge benefit to our ability to reach more teachers. If you're unsure of how to do that, you can head to topmusic.co/iTunes, where all the details are. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. Can't wait to speak with you again same time next week. Bye-bye, everyone. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.